I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Check it out now. No doubt now.
December 31st, 2019, the Beating the Books podcast with Gil Alexander. Final day of the year, final day of the decade. Happy New Year to you. Something special on today's show, in between Megapods, Wildcard Megapod coming up later this week. This is a look back at the decade, the years 2010 to 2019, and the best sports betting teams per sport of that decade. Not just teams, but individuals in individual sports. Horses in horse racing. We'll do horse racing, golf, tennis, Premier League soccer, college hoops, college football, and then the four major North American sports, hockey, baseball, the NBA, and the NFL. Defined by not the most powerful team of the decade, as a mainstream media show would do, but by the team that came back from the longest odds, either before the season started, mid-season, or maybe even before the postseason, to win its respective sport championship. We'll do it with Blake Mahoney of SportsOddsHistory.com, a special Beating the Book podcast, a look back at the best sports teams and stories of the decade. Enjoy.
It's a numbers game with your host, Gil Alexander.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
Hour number two of a numbers game right here at VSiN, the Vegas Stats and Information Network. Sirius XM Channel 204, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Vubo, Sling, and Game Plus. It's Gil Alexander. It's producer number five, Jeff Parlay, in the house. Jeff, your dad is here. You nervous? Are you nervous?
No. My parents and my girlfriend came in and watched the Marco Watch show on Friday, so I'm good.
Yeah, but are you nervous?
No.
Okay.
No.
All right. I'm very excited about this. It's a two-day special here on A Numbers Game on a very special episode of A Numbers Game at VSiN. Sports betting, we call it teams of the decade, but there are horses and individuals involved here. It's a two-day thing. Tomorrow we will do NHL, Major League Baseball, pro football, and pro basketball. Today we'll do all the rest. We'll even throw college football in today. How about that? So today we're going to do horses, golf, tennis, Premier League, oh, I know what that one's going to be, college basketball, college football. And to help us along, ladies and gentlemen, we couldn't do it without him. It's our old friend from SportsOddsHistory.com, Blake Mahoney. Good morning to you, Blake.
Morning. How you doing?
I'm doing very well. All right, Blake, let's define this. This is not, you know, you're not your average sports show teams of the decade, right? We're not going to talk about the 73-win Warriors as they might. We're going to talk about the teams that came back from the longest odds, either pre-flop or mid-season or just before the playoffs or whatever, that ended up winning their sports championship in that year. Is that correct, sir?
That's right. Yeah, we're looking at sort of the biggest bang for your buck long shots.
Okay, let's start with horses. I think everybody knows where this one's going to go.
Right, yeah. So with the Triple Crown races, there really weren't too many long shots. There was actually only one that was 25-1 or greater during the decade, and that was this year at the Kentucky Derby with Country House, who was 65-1.
Named the winner of the race in the most controversial of fashions when Maximum Security, who went under the wire first, was disqualified by Stewart. 65-1. Only the second time a winner had been disqualified in the Derby's 145-year history. First time, though, that it happened because of a foul claim during the race. I think in 1968, Dancer's Image was disqualified days after the race because of a drug violation. But this, 65-1, when Maximum Security was taken down due to an incident coming around the turn. He veered out slightly, squeezed War of Will, for those who remember it, caused Long Range Toddy to go back. Very controversial, 65-1. Something probably Blake will never see again, I would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, considering that it's happened so few times, and then for the long shot to be sort of the one to be sort of the unofficial runner-up and then be declared the winner, yeah, it's going to be a while before we see that again.
And I would like to speak for all sports betting aficionados who don't bet horses when I say, here was my reaction at the time. Could someone please explain to me what's going on? I had no clue whatsoever. It's like, can someone please explain what the rule is? What you horse people over there, tell me what the rule is. Blake, by the way, can be followed on Twitter at SO History on Twitter. Once again, Sports Odds History. All right. So Maximum Security, without question, the horse in terms of betting through the prism of bets, the horse of the decade. Let's do a little, let's go golf next, shall we?
Right. So during the decade, there were five players that were 101 or higher that before the start of the major that went on to win. And only one of those came since 2011. So it's been kind of mostly chalk, you know, in the last 8 years. So just kind of running down the list, we had 2011 Masters with Charles Schwartzel was 101.
Let me jump in. He won that by two strokes over Jason Day and Adam Scott, 2011 Masters. All right, what's next?
Mm-hmm. Next is the only one that's happened in the last 8 years was the 2016 PGA, where Jimmy Walker was 125-1.
125-1. Jimmy Walker beating Jason Day again by one stroke. That was that period where Jason Day was runner-up in a lot of things.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Next is another PGA 2011. Keegan Bradley was 150-1.
And that was a playoff, wasn't it, against Jason Duffner, if I'm not mistaken? I believe.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Next one was also came in 2011 at the British, where Darren Clark was 150-1 as well.
Three-stroke win over both Phil Mickelson and Dustin Johnson in that event.
Mm-hmm. And then the British again in 2010, where Louis Oosthuizen was 200-1.
So we are declaring Louis Oosthuizen the golfer through the betting prism, the golfer of the decade. Is that correct?
Yeah, we can go with that. You know, I mean, looking back, you know, he's obviously had a little bit, you know, maybe looking back, it's not quite as much of a shock considering how well he's done since then. But yeah, at the time, we can go with that as the golfer of the decade.
Yeah, with individual sports, it's a little harder because we have to pick a major specifically, so it's a little more polluted. It's not quite like the teams of the decade. But Oosthuizen won.
Right.
Oosthuizen won that particular event, the 139th Open Championship back in 2010, by seven strokes over Lee Westwood. I didn't remember it being that big of a win, but he destroyed it at the field in that.
Neither did I. Mm-hmm.
So now those are all pre-flop in golf. Now, there were many situations mid-tournament, and we don't have to look far back. Mark Leishman, 2015, my buddy E reminds me that in the Open in 2015, Mark Leishman was 175-1 at one point. He led on the 17th hole Sunday, then he made bogey, lost in the playoffs. So there's a lot of near misses that occur with guys you know, midstream. But those, in terms of pre-flop, those are your golfers of the decade with Louis Oosthuizen at 200-1, the 2010 Open Championship, emerging as the longest odds champion in any of golf's majors. Let's talk tennis again. Talking to Blake Mahoney here of Sports Odds History. Let's do the men's side first.
Right. So on the men's side, you know, I mean, obviously the decade was dominated by Djokovic, Nadal, Federer. So there really wasn't much opportunity for other, you know, for these long shots to come in. There were only five players overall that were greater than 10-1 that went on to win. But the largest was Marin Cilic at the 2014 U.S. Open, where he was 75-1.
Wow. Marin Cilic, who's still playing somewhat competitively, mm-hmm. Who's 31 years of age now. And first of all, it should be mentioned that since Cilic won the U.S. Open in 2014 at those odds, 75-1 pre-flop, only Stan Wawrinka's won. So there's been 20 majors since then. Excuse me, 30. No, check that. There's been 20 majors since then. Wawrinka's won two. Andy Murray's won one. So 17 have been won by the big three since then. Djokovic, as you point out, Djokovic, Federer, and Nadal. But to give you an idea how those three guys have dominated the tour, Cilic is the youngest man on planet Earth to currently say, I have a Grand Slam men's singles title. At the age of 31, he and Del Potro, right. Del Potro's like 5 days older than him, 31, which means that Federer and Nadal and Djokovic have wiped out a generation of tennis players, basically. It's amazing. But Marin Cilic.
Yeah, we're still kind of waiting for the next generation to finally take over.
That's amazing to me. 31 years old. So that was the 2014 U.S. Open, the last major of 2014. Marin mm-hmm. Cilic, 75-1 preflop. All right, let's go to the ladies' side.
Yep. There were a couple, you know, it's a little bit more common for some long shots to come in, but the two biggest were Marion Bartoli, a French woman, who was 100-1 in the 2013 Wimbledon. And then the biggest was Flavia Panetta was 150-1 to win the 2015 U.S. Open.
Now, I promise you, we're getting to college basketball, college football, and obviously the pro sports, and people are going to be like, okay, this I understand. But it occurs to me that the two names you just mentioned, there's some people are going to be like, wait, I don't even know who he's talking about. This actually happened, right? Like, so Mary Bartoli, she wins Wimbledon in 2013. She had played like 47, or she had won. She had the record for the most wins without ever winning a Grand Slam. I think most tournament wins without ever winning a Grand Slam. She didn't drop a set in that entire tournament. She like avoided Serena Williams that year. She got all the breaks, and she became the first female player who participated. Yeah, not the first one, but she had participated in most Grand Slam tournaments without ever having won one, her 47th such Grand Slam tournament. I'm sorry, not the most wins, but the most Grand Slam tournament participating before ever winning one. And she immediately, the next tournament, retired for good. She's like, that's it.
Retired, yep.
Got my one. And by the way, Flavia Panetta, who did it again, what did she win again? She won the, you just said.
2015
yeah,
U.S. Open.
2015 U.S. Open. And Serena had won all three majors that year. Serena would in effect have won the Grand Slam. Flavia Panetta did the same thing. She won the U.S. Open, and she was like, I'm out. I'm done. That's my career. Because when you wrote those two names down, I was like, I barely remember these people. I would imagine the listeners wouldn't. All right, let's get to something that people remember in a better way. So 150-1 for Panetta, 100-1 for Bartoli. They would be the women's tennis sports betting long shots of their sport. Let's do Premier League, and I think everybody knows where this is going.
Right, yeah. Leicester City, 2015-2016 season, 5,001. You know, kind of changed the sort of the way the odds are made. They don't make them that large anymore because, you know, it can happen. You know, they were the year before, they barely avoided relegation, and then they just caught lightning in a bottle and won the whole thing the next year.
Now think about what you just said. Leicester City won the 2015-2016 Premier League at 5,000-1 odds. The year before, again, almost relegated. They needed a flurry at the end of the year not to be. And we were just talking about all these other sports, golf, tennis. We were talking about horses. And those peaked at like 200-1 in the odds we just mentioned. Oosthuizen in the Open Championship of 2010. This is 5,000-1. Cost Will Hill UK, I think, upwards of $3 million, estimated to cost bookmakers across the UK over $15 million. And as you said,
right, yeah, I remember them. They're trying to pay people out before the season was even over to negotiate, you know, cheaper prices. So they weren't going to lose so much.
Yeah, cash out options available throughout, all formulaic. And you're right. William Hill UK said at the time, he said, "We'll never post odds higher than longer than 1,000 to 1 in anything ever again." After Leicester City cashed at 5,000 to 1. And just to give you a comp, like, what else do UK bookmakers, what did they put up at 5,000 to 1 odds? Elvis Presley being found alive. That's what happened with Leicester City at 5,000 to 1 odds. That might be, by the way, Blake, that might actually be the sports betting team period of the decade once we're all said and done with this and we have to pick one. Yeah.
Yeah, our entire lives. I can't see anything ever topping that.
I think you might be right on that count. Let's come back. Let's do college basketball and college football, sports betting teams of the decade. We'll do a couple honorable mentions in each sport. Then we'll give the sports betting team of the decade, the one that came back from the longest odds, not necessarily pre-flop, but at any point in the season in both college hoops and college football. We'll do that next with Blake Mahoney. Sports betting odds, sports betting teams of the decade on A Numbers Game right here at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back to A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
It is a numbers game right here at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. A numbers game where sports betting analytics live actionable sports betting information. That it is December 30th. Just thought to myself, you know, let's do a little decade review. Because we'll, you know, you don't get this chance but once every 10 years. And we've never been able to do it, obviously, on this network. I've never even been able to do it on the podcast. So we brought in our buddy from sportsoddshistory.com, Blake Mahoney. We've gone through horses, golf, tennis, and Premier League so far. The individuals, the horse, the team of the decade in terms of what of those came back from the longest odds, either before a season started, before a race started, before a tournament started, to get the prize in what was a golf major, a tennis major, or in the case of horse racing, the Triple Crown races, obviously Premier League, the entire Premier League title. By the way, Leicester City won that year with 81 points, 10-point win over Arsenal, who was in second place. Just an aberration, 5,000 to 1. And as we discussed, we'll never see that again. Maybe the sports team of the decade. Let's get to the more familiar sports, though. Blake, let's go to this side of the pond. We'll do college basketball first. How about some honorable mentions?
Right. So first, we'll go with 2015-2016 Villanova. They were 25-1 during the preseason. And they never really dipped below 10-1 until the Elite Eight round.
And that was, for those who are like, which Villanova team was that? That was Chris Jenkins with a three-pointer against North Carolina. And I was thinking about this, Jeff. I was like, where, you know, you remember where you were when you watched all these championship games? And I was like, wow, that's 2015, 2016. Seems ages ago to me. But that was obviously Chris Jenkins, who went to Gonzaga High in D.C., as a matter of fact, playing in Europe these days.
That Villanova team was really good during the regular season. I would imagine those odds never really moved because no one bet them because they had years of just anguish in the tournament before they finally broke through and won it.
Yeah, 25-1, though, at their peak, as Blake was just saying, during the preseason. What's another honorable mention?
Right, so quickly, the other Villanova team that won, they were actually 27-1 during the preseason, so a little bit higher, but they were the betting favorite by the time they entered the tournament. So that's why I put the 2016 version a little bit higher.
Oh, okay. So the 2017-2018 Villanova team, 27-1, and that was the team that crushed everybody in the tournament, right? They just destroyed everybody by double digits. They had no scares in that entire tournament. And you put them second just because why again? Explain.
Oh, just because, you know, the 2016 team was, you know, they kind of flew under the radar and they were 15-1 entering the tournament.
Okay.
While, the 2018 team was the betting favorite to win it all during entering the tournament.
Makes sense. All right. One more honorable mention before we name the team of the decade.
Right. So 2010-2011 UConn, they were 40-1 during the preseason. They went 26-9 during the regular season and then were 25-1 entering the tournament as the three seed.
And that was the Kemba Walker UConn team, which, if I'm not mistaken, weren't they like, Jeff, you'll tell me, weren't they like 500 during the Big East season? They were like 9-9 or something like that. And then they went on this, Kemba just went on this unbelievable run in the Big East tournament. And then obviously in the March Madness big dance as well.
9-9 Big East regular season, 5 wins in 5 days. Remember, that was the 16-team Big East
phenomenal.
Still.
Phenomenal.
They were the 9 seed in that tournament. That obviously, that Big East tournament known for when Kemba Walker ended Gary McGee's life on that crossover at the end of the,
he did.
At the end of the third game, that 1-9. And the Big East final between UConn and Louisville, UConn won despite Kemba getting an early foul trouble. That game really flipped the entire NCAA tournament because UConn got the 3 seed. They win it all. Louisville, if you remember, lost to Kenneth Faried and Morehead State that year in the first round.
Yeah, and UConn, the Kemba version of UConn that year again, because I think I know what's coming with the college basketball team of the decade, but the Kemba version, Kentucky, that's who they beat in the semis by a point, 56-55. Then they beat Butler by a dozen in the finals.
Horrible game.
Horrible game.
Horrible game.
What is your, like, I can't even think of a memory from that game.
It would, Butler shot 19% in that game. It was horrendous.
Yeah. All right, Blake, college basketball team of the decade will be, I know what's coming.
Right, so you already call it 2013-2014, UConn was 70-1 in the preseason, and actually higher, they were 95-1 entering the tournament to win it all.
And that was the Shabazz Napier version, as I like to call it, of UConn. Now, whenever before March Madness every year, and I don't know if you've been with me, Jeff, when I do this, but I do a college basketball March Madness formula. People who listen to A Numbers Game and have listened to the podcast at Beating the Book before know that I do this. And you, basically what it is I go through, here are the 6 criteria that every eventual national champion in college basketball has to their name. And it's like, you know, oh, they rank 20th in offensive adjusted efficiency in KenPom, offense, top 20 defensive efficiency. There's all these different stats that I put into it. And it has called up, every champion has had all of these characteristics, except one. Every exception is this team that Blake's talking about. The Shabazz Napier version of UConn, contrast them with the Kemba Walker UConn champion. The Shabazz Napier UConn champs. Remember, they were an 8 seed?
They were a 7.
They were 7. They beat 8 seed Kentucky in the finals, which was the Julius Randle Kentucky team. But like they were the exception of everything, right? So it was the Kevin Ollie coached UConn team. It wasn't even it was a different version of UConn. They, you know, they didn't have Sweet 16 experience. That was one of the criterion for all champions. They weren't, they didn't have at least 3 wins versus teams in the top 10% of strength of schedule, of RPI. That was another exception to that team. They weren't in, as I said, top 20 adjusted offensive or top 20 adjusted defensive efficiency. So that team was clearly the outlier of all outliers.
And that team should have lost in the round of 64 to St. Joseph's. Amita Brima had a 3-point play in the last minute of regulation of that game, made the free throw as a 52% free throw shooter. UConn won the game in overtime. Then I think it was Villanova, Iowa State, Michigan State. I don't remember who they beat. Oh, Florida. Number 1 overall seed Florida, who they destroyed after falling down double digits in the first half, and then that game against Kentucky.
Yeah. 9 seed versus 8 seed in the finals. Or seven seed versus.
Still pretty good.
Still amazing. I mean, it just doesn't happen.
Still pretty good.
But that game against St. Joseph, 89-81 in overtime.
They were done. They were down. They were down 5 in the last minute of regulation in that game.
By the way, the NC State in 83, the Jim Valvano team that won it all, they too had a near miss. I mean, there's a lot of near misses along the way. Blake, you were about to say something? I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. UConn was only favored in 2 of their tournament games. I mean, they just, and then ended up winning each game by 5 or more points. So it was, just kind of a unlikely path to the.
Yeah,
the championship.
The 2013-2014 UConn Huskies, your sports betting college basketball team of the decade. By the way, that doesn't mean they're the team of destiny like Virginia was last year, because I'll still contend that the way UVA won those games last year in the tournament still made them the team of the decade, especially after, not team of the decade, but the team of destiny, especially after how they lost to UMBC, 16 seed UMBC the previous year. team of destiny, but not sports betting team of the decade. That would be 2013-2014 UConn. Let's do college football to wrap it up today. We'll save all the four professional major sports for tomorrow. Blake, what do you got honorable mention in college football?
Right, so we're getting a little ahead of ourselves, but this year's LSU team closed at 25-1 to win the national championship. But obviously, a little too early to put them on the list.
But they'd be in the conversation, and people have them at higher than 25-1. I'm sure, in many spots.
Maybe. Yeah, I think they opened at 50-1, but they closed it at 25-1.
Okay. Honorable mention besides them.
Right. 2013 Florida State, they were 16-1 to win it all before the start of the season, and they were ranked number 11 in the preseason poll.
And that's the Jameis Winston Florida State Seminoles of 2013, who beat Auburn by a field goal in the championship, the BCS championship, right? Jeff, you remember that game?
Right, yeah.
That was Winston to Kelvin Benjamin to win the game at the end of the Rose Bowl.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a crazy 5 minutes. There were four lead changes in the final 5 minutes of the game.
Yeah, it's really, that game was unbelievable at the end. Seminoles win it 34-31 over Auburn in 2013. Florida State got a field goal on their the last sequence of that game, because in the fourth quarter, Florida State scored a touchdown early to make it a 1-point game. After Auburn made a field goal, Kermit Whitfield returned the following kickoff 100 yards. You remember that, to give the Seminoles a 3-point lead. Auburn answers with a touchdown to go up by 4 with just over a minute remaining. And then on their final drive, 7 plays, Florida State, as we mentioned, with 13 seconds remaining, a 49-yard completion to Rashad Green from Jameis, and then Jameis to Kelvin Benjamin for the game winner. Seminoles, what was their peak again in the odds that year?
16-1. That was the preseason, and they kind of fell throughout the season. They didn't go up any higher than that.
Okay. 2-yard touchdown pass to Kelvin Benjamin, with 13 seconds left. All right. They're one honorable mention. What's the other honorable mention you got?
2010 Auburn. They were 50-1 in the preseason. That was the Cam Newton. He was the junior transfer, and they had a preseason rank of number 22.
And what I recall most from that is we just didn't get how good Cam Newton would be, right? Like, we just didn't know. We heard about Cam Newton, but we had no clue that he would be that dominant. And that championship game against Oregon, which they won by a field goal, in contrast to Florida State, because Florida State in 2013, before that championship game, they murdered everybody that year, right? They crushed everybody. Whereas Auburn four games of a field goal or less that they won.
Right, yeah, including the national championship, 5 of their games were won by 3 points or less.
All right, so 2013 Florida State, 2010 Auburn. Who is the college football betting team of the decade, sir?
So I'm giving this one to 2014 Ohio State. They initially opened up at 10-1, but senior QB Braxton Miller, who was a Heisman contender, he injured his shoulder in training camp, so they had to go with redshirt freshman JT Barrett, and they moved all the way up to 40-1 before the start of the season.
Before the start of the playoff, or no, during the, well, before the start of the season, they were 40-1 at their peak. What were they before?
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So wait, but you said Auburn was 50-1. So why do you give it to Ohio State?
Right. So I'm giving it to Ohio State just because even throughout the year, they were never below 10-1. Even entering the college football playoff, they were 15-1. They were an underdog even entering the conference championship to Wisconsin, and they ended up winning that 59-0.
I like that call. So, I think you're right.
Yeah, and I'm just giving it to them just because they were never really considered the favorite, where Auburn, you know, kind of moved up the ranks.
I love it.
You know, you could have had Ohio State, and Ohio State also lost in week 2 to Virginia Tech, and they moved. They were still 40-1 at that point.
That's right. They lost by 2 touchdowns to Va Tech. And then, of course, the person we're not mentioning here is Cardale Jones. Cardale Jones, who had the 3-game spectacular that, remember, led people to say after that, hey, man, like, he could be a top 3 pick in the draft. Remember how people were like, oh, my God, he could be drafted right at the top. He elected to stay, I believe. ended up where the Bills camp and the Chargers camp for a while. But they beat Wisconsin in the Big Ten Championship 59-0. And then they were dogs against Bama, beat Bama by a touchdown in a game that wasn't really as close. I mean, they were up by more than that. Zeke just ran all over Alabama in that game. And then they beat Oregon in the finals. That was more comfortable, 42-20.
Right, but even then, they were still a 5.5-point underdog in that game.
Right, still a dog all the way through the end. I think you're right. That is the college football sports betting team of the decade. That's great stuff, Blake. I appreciate it. How about we take a break here? We'll come back tomorrow. We'll do the four major professional sports. We'll do hockey. We'll do baseball. We'll do the NBA and the NFL tomorrow. We're good? We lost Blake there. I think we lost him for a second. We heard his voice. Oh, there he is. Blake Mahoney from Sports Odds History at SO History. Talk to you tomorrow, Blake, okay?
All right, sounds good.
All right, man. Thanks so much. Interesting. We'll come back. We'll put a little more stuff in perspective beyond that with the sports betting teams of the decade. And we'll talk about today's college football games. I guess we're contractually obligated to talk about this dreck, Jeff, coming up today. Right here on A Numbers Game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back to A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
Still plenty of College Bowl action left, by the way, this week. The VSiN College Bowl Guide now available for just $5. Five United States dollars, Jeff. Get stats, trends, and analysis for the remaining games, along with best bets from 10 VSiN experts, including Paulie Howard, Michael Lombardi, Mitch Moss, Dave Tooley, Matt Eumanns. Huh, not listed here. Producer number five, Jeff Parlay. What's your record, Jeff?
5-2.
5-2.
Hilltoppers get it done this afternoon. We'll clinch it over 500 in that.
Yeah, you got the Hilltoppers. I'm in Futak. I'm at collegefootballnews.com because apparently they didn't ask me here. So I'm in that with a bunch of experts throughout the nation who write college football blogs. I'm 13-7 ATS. They assign the games to us. Don't forget also in the VSiN College Bowl Guide, Brent Musburger, Steve Mackinnon, they offer an opinion on every side in total. Find out why it's VSiN's most popular betting guide. Details at VSiN.com/subscribe. That's VSiN.com/subscribe. Just $5 now with four bowl games today. We'll get to those momentarily. I just wanted to comment before we get off the sports betting teams of the decade there. And nice job from Blake Mahoney going through all those sports. But there's other things to talk about, clearly, that happened sports betting-wise this decade. And maybe the single most important day of all of them, Jeff, was May 14th, 2018. I was sitting here with producer number three, Jorge Mondaca. May he rest in peace, by the way. Jorge and I were here, and we had this thing every morning because we get on the air at 7 a.m. Pacific, 10 a.m. Eastern. And because we happened to be on air at that time, that's when the Supreme Court decides to announce decisions on cases that have gotten all the way up to the highest court of this land. And so there are certain days that they have signed on the calendar, and we knew that the sports betting case was on the docket, or really the case about PASPA. And so there were several dates during January and February and March and April. And we basically had to prepare for two shows that morning, the show we were going to do on a normal day, and then the show that we would have to do if, in fact, the Supreme Court decided, hey, we're ready to announce our decision on this. And May 14th, 2018 was that day where the Supreme Court ruled in a 6-3 decision, which did not really fall on partisan lines, by the way, that the Professional and Amateur Sports Protection Act, PASPA, was unconstitutional. PASPA had been passed in 1992, had served as a blanket prohibition on state-sponsored sports betting, save for a few states, obviously Nevada being one of them, that were grandfathered in under the previous allowances of that. But that was May 14th, 2018, and that has changed the way that we do our shows, the way that we talk about things, because obviously now 20-plus states have some form of sports betting going on. There will only be more added. California, for instance, a big one to drop at some point in the future. But jurisdiction by jurisdiction, sports betting all over the land. And so when we're here, we're talking about things in New Jersey. We're talking about things in Mississippi, all over the country. So that was obviously maybe the single biggest day when it comes to sports betting this decade. I think Leicester City, which we talked about with the Premier League, I think that would, of all the teams in any sport, that's probably the biggest sports betting story of any team, Leicester City. 2015-2016 Premier League, globally speaking. And then there's some other, I mean, then the obvious other one here, I think, in this country And really the thing we got the most mileage out of at any stretch of time here on VSiN was obviously Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor. Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor, the odds opened for that fight. Floyd Mayweather was, I think he was a minus 2,500 favorite at the Superbook. I want to say it was minus 2,700 here at the South Point. And Conor McGregor was plus 1,100 coming back in both cases. That was at the beginning. And it kept crashing and crashing and crashing. And this is over weeks and months even. And the closer the fight got, we couldn't believe that it kept going down. And I remember having Jimmy Vaccaro on the show and saying to him, he's like, what are you waiting for, kid? When are you getting in? I said, I'm waiting for Mayweather to get to minus 500. If he gets to minus 500, I'm in. I remember it dipped to minus 550 there for a second, then jumped back up to minus 600. I was like, ah, maybe I got too greedy. Nope, didn't get too greedy. Got to minus 500, even got into the minus 400s here around town. And offshore, even south of minus 400. Pinnacle, I believe, closed at minus 375 on Floyd Mayweather. And it remains to this day, I said Saturday, being very honest, Saturday was the biggest single betting day of my life this past Saturday. I'm verklempt even talking about it. But as far as one single event was the most money I've ever bet on one single event, it will always probably remain Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor. And I remember, and it was one of those things where a lot of people in town would go to a bank and withdraw money, and the teller would say to you, you'd be like, yeah, I'll have this money back on Monday. Why are you taking all this money? I'll have it back on Monday. Don't worry. And then when the night of the fight actually got here, and people who were, I was at Teddy Covers' house. Teddy Covers had a viewing party that night. Shout out to Teddy and his son, the great basketball playing Isaiah. But we're at Teddy Covers' house. And when you have that much going on an event, and this speaks for so many of us, then when it starts, you're like, okay, this is boxing. What have I done? What have I gotten myself into? And Conor McGregor, for the first three rounds, kind of wins all three of those rounds. And even though you know Floyd could probably figure this out, there's a little bit of you who's like, what's happening here? And then once Floyd decided to do his thing, it was over, and in a dominant fashion. But that, I mean, if you talk about Leicester City team of the decade, PASPA that day being the single biggest impactful day, but there will never be anything like Mayweather-McGregor again, because it was this unbelievable MMA money, the MMA people banking on Conor, and all this Irish money in town. It was an amazing weekend. Jeff, you were leaning in. You want to say something?
No, I have nothing to add other than that was that and the Nationals this year probably were the two biggest successes in a way. A line came to a position that I liked as well.
Well, the Nationals here on a numbers game, we said it. I said repeatedly, and I'd never say this about anything else, it was your obligation to bet the Washington Nationals. If you are doing this correctly.
Check it out now. No doubt now.
December 31st, 2019, the Beating the Book podcast with Gil Alexander. Final day of the year, final day of the decade. Happy New Year to you. Something special on today's show, in between Megapods, Wildcard Megapod coming up later this week. This is a look back at the decade, the years 2010 to 2019, and the best sports betting teams per sport of that decade. Not just teams, but individuals in individual sports. Horses in horse racing. We'll do horse racing, golf, tennis, Premier League soccer, college hoops, college football, and then the four major North American sports, hockey, baseball, the NBA, and the NFL. Defined by not the most powerful team of the decade, as a mainstream media show would do, but by the team that came back from the longest odds, either before the season started, mid-season, or maybe even before the postseason, to win its respective sport championship. We'll do it with Blake Mahoney of SportsOddsHistory.com, a special Beating the Book podcast, a look back at the best sports teams and stories of the decade. Enjoy.
It's a numbers game with your host, Gil Alexander.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
Hour number two of a numbers game right here at VSiN, the Vegas Stats and Information Network. Sirius XM Channel 204, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Vubo, Sling, and Game Plus. It's Gil Alexander. It's producer number five, Jeff Parlay, in the house. Jeff, your dad is here. You nervous? Are you nervous?
No. My parents and my girlfriend came in and watched the Marco Watch show on Friday, so I'm good.
Yeah, but are you nervous?
No.
Okay.
No.
All right, I'm very excited about this. It's a two-day special here on A Numbers Game on a very special episode of A Numbers Game at VSiN. Sports betting, we call it teams of the decade, but there are horses and individuals involved here. It's a two-day thing. Tomorrow we will do NHL, Major League Baseball, pro football, and pro basketball. Today we'll do all the rest. We'll even throw college football in today. How about that? So today we're going to do horses, golf, tennis, Premier League. Oh, I know what that one's going to be. College basketball and college football. And to help us along, ladies and gentlemen, we couldn't do it without him. It's our old friend from sportsoddshistory.com, Blake Mahoney. Good morning to you, Blake.
Morning. How you doing?
I'm doing very well. All right, Blake, let's define this. This is not, you know, you're not your average sports show teams of the decade, right? We're not going to talk about the 73-win Warriors as they might. We're going to talk about the teams that came back from the longest odds, either pre-flop or mid-season or just before the playoffs or whatever, that ended up winning their sports championship in that year. Is that correct, sir?
That's right. Yeah, we're looking at sort of the biggest bang for your buck long shots.
Okay, let's start with horses. I think everybody knows where this one's going to go.
Right, yeah. So with the Triple Crown races, there really weren't too many long shots. There was actually only one that was 25-1 or greater during the decade, and that was this year at the Kentucky Derby with Country House, who was 65-1.
Named the winner of the race in the most controversial of fashions when Maximum Security, who went under the wire first, was disqualified by Stewart. 65-1. Only the second time a winner had been disqualified in the Derby's 145-year history. First time, though, that it happened because of a foul claim during the race. I think in 1968, Dancer's Image was disqualified days after the race because of a drug violation. But this 65-1, when Maximum Security was taken down due to an incident coming around the turn, he veered out slightly, squeezed War of Will. For those who remember it, caused Long Range Toddy to go back. Very controversial, 65-1. Something probably Blake will never see again, I would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, considering that it's happened so few times, and then for the long shot to be sort of the one to be sort of the unofficial runner-up and then be declared the winner, yeah, it's going to be a while before we see that again.
And I would like to speak for all sports betting aficionados who don't bet horses when I say, here was my reaction at the time. Could someone please explain to me what's going on? I had no clue whatsoever. It's like, can someone please explain what the rule is? What you horse people over there, tell me what the rule is. Blake, by the way, can be followed on Twitter at SO History on Twitter. Once again, Sports Odds History. All right. So Maximum Security, without question, the horse in terms of betting through the prism of bets, the horse of the decade. Let's do a little, let's go golf next, shall we?
Right. So during the decade, there were five players that were 101 or higher that before the start of the major that went on to win. And only one of those came since 2011. So it's been kind of mostly chalk, you know, in the last 8 years. So just kind of running down the list, we had 2011 Masters with Charles Schwartzel was 100-1.
Let me jump in. He won that by two strokes over Jason Day and Adam Scott. 2011 Masters. All right. What's next?
Mm-hmm. Next is the only one that's happened in the last 8 years was the 2016 PGA where Jimmy Walker was 125-1.
125-1. Jimmy Walker beating Jason Day again by one stroke. That was that period where Jason Day was runner up in a lot of things.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Next is another PGA 2011. Keegan Bradley was 150-1.
And that was a playoff, wasn't it, against Jason Duffner, if I'm not mistaken? I believe.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Next one was also came in 2011 at the British where Darren Clark was 150-1 as well.
three-stroke lead over both Phil, a three-stroke win rather over both Phil Mickelson and Dustin Johnson in that event.
Mm-hmm. And then the British again in 2010, where Louis Oosthuizen was 200-1.
So we are declaring Louis Oosthuizen the golfer from through the betting prism, the golfer of the decade. Is that correct?
Yeah, we can go with that. You know, I mean, looking back, you know, he's obviously had a little bit, you know, maybe looking back, it's not quite as much of a shock considering how well he's done since then. But yeah, at the time, we can go with that as the golfer of the decade.
Yeah, with individual sports, it's a little harder because we have to pick a major specifically, so it's a little more polluted. It's not quite like the teams of the decade. But Oosthuizen won.
Right.
Oosthuizen won that particular event, the 139th Open Championship back in 2010, by 7 strokes over Lee Westwood. I didn't remember it being that big of a win, but he destroyed it the field in that.
Neither did I. Mm-hmm.
So now those are all pre-flop in golf. Now, there were many situations mid-tournament, and we don't have to look far back. Mark Leishman, 2015, my buddy E reminds me that in the Open, in 2015, Mark Leishman was 175-1 at one point. He led on the 17th hole Sunday. Then he made bogey, lost in the playoffs. So there's a lot of near misses that occur with guys, you know, midstream. But those, in terms of preflop, those are your golfers of the decade with Louis Oosthuizen at 200-1, the 2010 Open Championship, emerging as the longest odds champion in any of golf's majors. Let's talk tennis again. Talking to Blake Mahoney here of Sports Odds History. Let's do the men's side first.
Right. So on the men's side, you know, I mean, obviously the decade was dominated by Djokovic, Nadal, Federer. So there really wasn't much opportunity for other, you know, for these long shots to come in. There are only 5 players overall that were greater than 10-1 that went on to win. But the largest was Marin Cilic at the 2014 U.S. Open, where he was 75-1.
Wow. Marin Cilic, who's still playing somewhat competitively, mm-hmm. Who's 31 years of age now. And first of all, it should be mentioned that since Cilic won the U.S. Open in 2014 at those odds, 75-1 pre-flop, only Stan Wawrinka's won. So there's been 20 majors since then. Excuse me, 30. No, check that. There's been 20 majors since then. Wawrinka's won 2. Right. Andy Murray's won 1. So 17 have been won by the big 3 since then. Djokovic, as you point out, Djokovic, Federer, and Nadal. But give you an idea how those 3 guys have dominated the tour, Cilic is the youngest man on planet Earth to currently say, I have a Grand Slam men's singles title. At the age of 31, he and Del Potro, right. Del Potro's like 5 days older than him. 31, which means that Federer and Nadal and Djokovic have wiped out a generation of tennis players, basically. It's amazing. But Marin Cilic.
We're still kind of waiting for the next generation to finally take over.
That's amazing to me. 31 years old. So that was the 2014 U.S. Open, the last major of 2014. Marin Cilic, 75-1 preflop. All right, let's go to the ladies' side.
Yep. There were a couple, you know, it's a little bit more common for some long shots to come in, but the 2 biggest were Marion Bartoli, a French woman, who was 100-1 in the 2013 Wimbledon. And then the biggest was Flavia Panetta, was 150-1 to win the 2015 U.S. Open.
Now, I promise you, we're getting to college basketball, college football, and obviously the pro sports, and people are going to be like, okay, this I understand. But it occurs to me that the 2 names you just mentioned, there's some people are going to be like, wait, I don't even know who he's talking about. This actually happened, right? Like, so Mary Bartoli, she wins Wimbledon in 2013. She had played like 47, or she had won. She had the record for the most wins without ever winning a Grand Slam. I think most tournament wins without ever winning a Grand Slam. She didn't drop a set in that entire tournament. She like avoided Serena Williams that year. She got all the breaks, and she became the first female player who participated, yeah, not the first one, but she had participated in most Grand Slam tournaments without ever having won one, her 47th such Grand Slam tournament, I'm sorry, not the most wins, but the most Grand Slam tournament participating before ever winning one, and she immediately, the next tournament, retired for good. She's like, that's it.
Retired, yep.
Got my one. And by the way, Flavia Panetta, who did it, again, what did she win again? She won the, you just said.
2015
yeah,
U.S. Open.
2015 U.S. Open. And Serena had won all three majors that year. Serena would, in effect, have won the Grand Slam. Flavia Panetta did the same thing. She won the U.S. Open, and she was like, I'm out. I'm done. That's my career. Because when you wrote those two names down, I was like, I barely remember these people. I would imagine the listeners wouldn't. All right, let's get to something that people remember in a better way. So 150-1 for Panetta, 100-1 for Bartoli. They would be the women's tennis sports betting long shots of their sport. Let's do Premier League, and I think everybody knows where this is going.
Right, yeah. Leicester City, 2015-2016 season, 5,001. You know, kind of changed the sort of the way the odds are made. They don't make them that large anymore because, you know, it can happen. You know, they were the year before, they barely avoided relegation, and then they just caught lightning in a bottle and won the whole thing the next year.
Now, think about what you just said. Leicester City won the 2015-2016 Premier League at 5,000-1 odds. The year before, again, almost relegated. They needed a flurry at the end of the year not to be. And we were just talking about all these other sports, golf, tennis. We were talking about horses. And those peaked at like 200-1 in the odds we just mentioned. Oosthuizen in the Open Championship of 2010. This is 5,000-1. Cost Will Hill UK, I think, upwards of $3 million, estimated to cost bookmakers across the UK over $15 million. And as you said...
Right, yeah, I remember then they're trying to pay people out before the season was even over to negotiate, you know, cheaper prices. So they weren't going to lose so much.
Yeah, cash out options available throughout, all formulaic. And you're right, William Hill UK said at the time, he said, we'll never post odds higher than longer than 1,000-1 in anything ever again. After Leicester City cashed at 5,000-1. And just to give you a comp, like what else do UK bookmakers, what did they put up at 5,000-1 odds? Elvis Presley being found alive. That's what happened with Leicester City at 5,000-1 odds. That might be, by the way, Blake, that might actually be the sports betting team period of the decade once we're all said and done with this and we have to pick one. Yeah.
Yeah, our entire lives. I can't see anything ever topping that.
I think you might be right on that count. Let's come back. Let's do college basketball and college football, sports betting teams of the decade. We'll do a couple honorable mentions in each sport. Then we'll give the sports betting team of the decade, the one that came back from the longest odds, not necessarily pre-flop, but at any point in the season in both college hoops and college football. We'll do that next with Blake Mahoney. Sports betting odds, sports betting teams of the decade on A Numbers Game right here at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back to A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
It is a numbers game right here at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. A Numbers Game, where sports betting analytics live, actionable sports betting information. That it is December 30th. Just thought to myself, you know, let's do a little decade review. Because you don't get this chance but once every 10 years. And we've never been able to do it, obviously, on this network. I've never even been able to do it on the podcast. So we brought in our buddy from sportsoddshistory.com, Blake Mahoney. We've gone through horses, golf, tennis, and Premier League so far. The individuals, the horse, the team of the decade in terms of what of those came back from the longest odds, either before a season started, before a race started, before a tournament started, to get the prize in what it was, a golf major, a tennis major, or in the case of horse racing, the Triple Crown races, obviously Premier League, the entire Premier League title. By the way, Leicester City won that year with 81 points, 10-point win over Arsenal, who was in second place. Just an aberration, 5,000-1. And as we discussed, we'll never see that again. Maybe the sports team of the decade. Let's get to the more familiar sports, though. Blake, let's go to this side of the pond. We'll do college basketball first. How about some honorable mentions?
Right. So first, we'll go with 2015-2016 Villanova. They were 25-1 during the preseason, and they never really dipped below 10-1 until the Elite Eight round.
And that was, for those who are like, which Villanova team was that? That was Chris Jenkins with a three-pointer against North Carolina. And I was thinking about this, Jeff. I was like, where, you know, you remember where you were when you watch all these championship games? And I was like, wow, that's 2015, 2016. Seems ages ago to me. But that was obviously Chris Jenkins, who went to Gonzaga High in D.C., as a matter of fact, playing in Europe these days.
That Villanova team was really good during the regular season. I would imagine those odds never really moved because no one bet them because they had years of just anguish in the tournament before they finally broke through and won it.
Yeah, 25-1 though at their peak, as Blake was just saying during the preseason. What's another honorable mention?
Right. So quickly, the other Villanova team that won, they were actually 27-1 during the preseason, so a little bit higher, but they were the betting favorite by the time they entered the tournament. So that's why I put the 2016 version a little bit higher.
Oh, okay. So the 2017-2018 Villanova team, 27-1, and that was the team that crushed everybody in the tournament, right? They just destroyed everybody by double digits. They had no scares in that entire tournament. And you put them second just because why again? Explain.
Oh, just because, the 2016 team was, they kind of flew under the radar and they were 15-1 entering the tournament.
Okay.
While, the 2018 team was the betting favorite to win it all during entering the tournament.
Makes sense. All right. One more honorable mention before we name the team of the decade.
Right. So 2010-2011, UConn, they were 40-1 during the preseason. They went 26-9 during the regular season and then were 25-1 entering the tournament as the three seed.
And that was the Kemba Walker UConn team, which, I mean, I'm not mistaken, yep. Weren't they like, Jeff, you'll tell me, weren't they like 500 during the Big East season? They were like 9-9 or something like that. And then they went on this, Kemba just went on this unbelievable run in the Big East tournament. And then obviously in the March Madness big dance as well.
9-9 Big East regular season, 5 wins in 5 days. Remember, that was the 16-team Big East
phenomenal.
Still.
Phenomenal.
They were the 9 seed in that tournament. That Big East tournament known for when Kemba Walker ended Gary McGee's life on that crossover at
yes.
the end of the,
he did.
At the end of the third game, that 1-9, and the Big East final between UConn and Louisville, UConn won despite Kemba getting an early foul trouble. That game really flipped the entire NCAA tournament because UConn got the 3 seed. They win it all. Louisville, if you remember, lost to Kenneth Faried and Morehead State that year in the first round.
Yeah, and UConn, the Kemba version of UConn that year again, because I think I know what's coming with the college basketball team of the decade, but the Kemba version, Kentucky, that's who they beat in the semis by a point, 56-55. Then they beat Butler by a dozen in the finals.
Horrible game.
Horrible game.
Horrible game.
What is your, I can't even think of a memory from that game.
It would, Butler shot 19% in that game. It was horrendous.
Yeah. All right, Blake, college basketball team of the decade will be, I know what's coming.
Right, so you already call it 2013-2014, UConn was 70-1 in the preseason, and actually higher, they were 95-1 entering the tournament to win it all.
And that was the Shabazz Napier version, as I like to call it, of UConn. Now, before March Madness every year, and I don't know if you've been with me, Jeff, when I do this, but I do a college basketball March Madness formula. People who listen to A Numbers Game and have listened to the podcast at Beating the Book before know that I do this. And what it is, I go through, here are the 6 criteria that every eventual national champion in college basketball has to their name. And it's like, they ranked 20th in offensive adjusted efficiency in KenPom, offense, top 20 defensive efficiency. There's all these different stats that I put into it. And it has called up, every champion has had all of these characteristics, except one. Every exception is this team that Blake's talking about. The Shabazz Napier version of UConn, contrast them with the Kemba Walker UConn champion. The Shabazz Napier UConn champs. Remember, they were an 8 seed?
They were 7.
They were 7. They beat 8 seed Kentucky in the finals, which was the Julius Randle Kentucky team. But they were the exception of everything, right? So it was the Kevin Ollie coached UConn team. It wasn't even it was a different version of UConn. They didn't have Sweet 16 experience. That was one of the criterion for all champions. They weren't You know, they weren't, they didn't have at least three wins versus teams in the top 10% of strength of schedule, of RPI. That was another exception of that team. They weren't in, as I said, top 20 adjusted offensive or top 20 adjusted defensive efficiency. So that team was clearly the outlier of all outliers.
And that team should have lost in the round of 64 to St. Joseph's. Amita Brima had a three-point play in the last minute of regulation of that game, made the free throw as a 52% free throw shooter. UConn won the game in overtime. Then I think it was Villanova, Iowa State, Michigan State. I don't remember who they beat. Oh, Florida. Number one overall seed Florida, who they destroyed after falling down double digits in the first half, and then that game against Kentucky.
Yeah. Nine seed versus eight seed in the finals. Or seven seed versus.
Still pretty good.
Still amazing. I mean, this doesn't happen.
Still pretty good.
But that game against St. Joseph, 89-81 in overtime.
They were done. They were down five in the last minute of regulation in that game.
By the way, the NC State in 83, the Jim Valvano team that won it all, they too had a near miss. I mean, there's a lot of near misses along the way. Blake, you were about to say something? I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. UConn was only favored in two of their tournament games. I mean, they just, and then ended up winning each game by five or more points. So it was, just kind of a
jeez
unlikely path to the. Yeah, the championship.
The 2013-2014 UConn Huskies, your sports betting college basketball team of the decade. By the way, that doesn't mean they're the team of destiny like Virginia was last year, because I'll still contend that the way UVA won those games last year in the tournament still made them the team of the decade, especially after, not team of the decade, but the team of destiny, especially after how they lost to UMBC, 16 seed UMBC the previous year. Team of destiny, but not sports betting team of the decade. That would be 2013-2014 UConn. Let's do college football to wrap it up today. We'll save all the four professional major sports for tomorrow. Blake, what do you got honorable mention in college football?
Right, so we're getting a little ahead of ourselves, but this year's LSU team closed at 25-1 to win the national championship, but obviously a little too early to put them on the list.
But they'd be in the conversation. And people have them at higher than 25-1, I'm sure, in many spots. Maybe.
Yeah, I think they opened at 50-1, but they closed it at 25-1.
Okay. Honorable mention besides them.
Right. 2013 Florida State, they were 16-1 to win it all before the start of the season, and they were ranked number 11 in the preseason poll.
And that's the Jameis Winston, Florida State Seminoles of 2013. Who beat Auburn yep. by a field goal in the championship, the BCS championship, right? Jeff, you remember that game?
Right, yeah.
That was Winston to Kelvin Benjamin to win the game at the end of the Rose Bowl.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a crazy 5 minutes. There were four lead changes in the final 5 minutes of the game.
Yeah, it's really, that game was unbelievable at the end. Seminoles win it 34-31 over Auburn in 2013. Florida State got a field goal on their I want to get the last sequence of that game because in the fourth quarter, Florida State scored a touchdown early to make it a 1-point game. After Auburn made a field goal, Kermit Whitfield returned the following kickoff 100 yards. You remember that, to give the Seminoles a 3-point lead. Auburn answers with a touchdown to go up by four with just over a minute remaining. And then on their final drive, seven plays, Florida State, as we mentioned, with 13 seconds remaining, a 49-yard completion to Rashad Green from Jameis, and then Jameis to Kelvin Benjamin for the game winner. Seminoles, what was their peak again in the odds that year?
16-1, that was the preseason, and they kind of fell throughout the season. They didn't go up any higher than that.
Okay, 2-yard touchdown pass to Kelvin Benjamin, with 13 seconds left. All right, their one honorable mention. What's the other honorable mention you got?
2010, Auburn, they were 50-1 in the preseason. That was the Cam Newton, he was the junior transfer, and they had a preseason rank of number 22.
And what I recall most from that is we just didn't, Blake, get how good Cam Newton would be, right? Like, we just didn't know. We heard about Cam Newton, but we had no clue that he would be that dominant. And that championship game against Oregon, which they won by a field goal, in contrast to Florida State, because Florida State in 2013, before that championship game, they murdered everybody that year, right? They crushed everybody. Whereas Auburn four games of a field goal or less that they won.
Right, yeah, including the national championship, five of their games were won by 3 points or less.
All right, so 2013 Florida State, 2010 Auburn. Who is the college football betting team of the decade, sir?
So I'm giving this one to 2014 Ohio State. They initially opened up at 10-1, but senior QB Braxton Miller, who was a Heisman contender, he injured his shoulder in training camp. So they had to go with redshirt freshman JT Barrett, and they moved all the way up to 40-1 before the start of the season.
Before the start of the playoff, or no, during the, well, before the start of the season, they were 40-1 at their peak. What were they before? Yeah, okay. So wait, but you said Auburn was 50-1. So why do you give it to Ohio State?
Right. So I'm giving it to Ohio State just because even throughout the year, they were never below 10-1, and even entering the college football playoff, they were 15-1. They were an underdog, even entering the conference championship to Wisconsin, and they ended up winning that 59-0.
I like that call. So, I think you're right.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm just giving it to them just because they were never really considered the favorite, where Auburn, you know, kind of moved up the ranks.
But, I love it.
You know, you could have had Ohio State, and Ohio State also lost in week two to Virginia Tech, and they moved. They were still 40-1 at that point.
That's right. They lost by 2 touchdowns to VaTech. And then, of course, the person we're not mentioning here is Cardale Jones. Cardale Jones, who had the 3-game spectacular that, remember, led people to say after that, hey, man, like, he could be a top 3 pick in the draft. Remember how people were like, oh, my God, he could be drafted right at the top. He elected to stay, I believe. Ended up where the Bills camp and the Chargers camp for a while. But they beat Wisconsin in the Big Ten Championship 59-0. And then they were dogs against Bama, beat Bama by a touchdown in a game that wasn't really as close. I mean, they were up by more than that. Zeke just ran all over Alabama in that game. And then they beat Oregon in the finals. That was more comfortable, 42-20.
Right, but even then, they were still a 5.5-point underdog in that game.
Right, still a dog all the way through the end. I think you're right. That is the college football sports betting team of the decade. That's great stuff, Blake. I appreciate it. How about we take a break here? We'll come back tomorrow. We'll do the four major professional sports. We'll do hockey. We'll do baseball. We'll do the NBA and the NFL tomorrow. We're good? We lost Blake there. I think we lost him for a second. We heard his voice. There. All right, there he is. Blake Mahoney from Sports Odds History at SO History. Talk to you tomorrow, Blake, okay?
All right, sounds good.
All right, man. Thanks so much. Interesting. We'll come back. We'll put a little more stuff in perspective beyond that with the sports betting teams of the decade. And we'll talk about today's college football games. I guess we're contractually obligated to talk about this dreck, Jeff, coming up today. Right here on A Numbers Game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back to A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
Still plenty of college bowl action left, by the way, this week. The Visa College Bowl Guide now available for just $5. Five United States dollars, Jeff. Get stats, trends, and analysis for the remaining games, along with best bets from 10 VEASAN experts, including Paulie Howard, Michael Lombardi, Mitch Moss, Dave Tooley, Matt Eumanns. Huh, not listed here. Producer number 5, Jeff Parlay. What's your record, Jeff?
5-2.
5-2.
Hilltoppers get it done this afternoon. We'll clinch it over 500 in that.
Yeah, you got the Hilltoppers? I'm in FUTAC. I'm at collegefootballnews.com because apparently they didn't ask me here. So I'm in that with a bunch of experts throughout the nation who write college football blogs. I'm 13-7 ATS. They assign the games to us. Don't forget, also in the VEASAN College Bowl Guide, Brent Musburger, Steve Mackinnon, they offer an opinion on every side in total. Find out why it's VEASAN's most popular betting guide. Details at VEASAN.com/subscribe. That's VEASAN.com/subscribe. Just $5 now with 4 bowl games today. We'll get to those momentarily. I just wanted to comment before we get off the sports betting teams of the decade there. And nice job from Blake Mahoney going through all those sports. But there's other things to talk about, clearly, that happened sports betting-wise this decade. And maybe the single most important day of all of them, Jeff, was May 14th, 2018. I was sitting here with producer number 3, Jorge Mondaca. May he rest in peace, by the way. Jorge and I were here, and we had this thing every morning because we get on the air at 7 a.m. Pacific, 10 a.m. Eastern. And because we happened to be on air at that time, that's when the Supreme Court decides to announce decisions on cases that have gotten all the way up to the highest court of this land. And so there are certain days that they have signed on the calendar, and we knew that the sports betting case was on the docket, or the, really the case about PASPA. And so there were several dates during January and February and March and April, and we basically had to prepare for two shows that morning. The show we were going to do on a normal day, and then the show that we would have to do if, in fact, the Supreme Court decided, hey, we're ready to announce our decision on this. And May 14th, 2018 was that day where the Supreme Court ruled in a 6-3 decision, which did not really fall on partisan lines, by the way, that the Professional and Amateur Sports Protection Act, PASPA, was unconstitutional. PASPA had been passed in 1992, had served as a blanket prohibition on state-sponsored sports betting, save for a few states, obviously Nevada being one of them, that were grandfathered in under the previous allowances of that. But that was May 14th, 2018, and that has changed the way that we do our shows, the way that we talk about things, because obviously now 20-plus states have some form of sports betting going on. There will only be more added. California, for instance, a big one to drop at some point in the future. But jurisdiction by jurisdiction, sports betting all over the land. And so when we're here, we're talking about things in New Jersey. We're talking about things in Mississippi, all over the country. So that was obviously maybe the single biggest day when it comes to sports betting this decade. I think Leicester City, which we talked about with the Premier League, I think that would, of all the teams in any sport, that's probably the biggest sports betting story of any team, Leicester City, 2015-2016 Premier League, globally speaking. And there's some other, I mean, then the obvious other one here, I think, in this country, and really the thing we got the most mileage out of at any stretch of time here on VSiN was obviously Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor. Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor, the odds opened for that fight. Floyd Mayweather was, I think he was a minus 2,500 favorite at the Superbook. I want to say it was minus 2,700 here at the South Point. And Conor McGregor was plus 1,100 coming back in both cases. That was at the beginning. And it kept crashing and crashing and crashing. And this is over weeks and months even. And the closer the fight got, we couldn't believe that it kept going down. And I remember having Jimmy Vaccaro on the show and saying to him, he's like, what are you waiting for, kid? When are you getting in? I said, I'm waiting for Mayweather to get to minus 500. If he gets to minus 500, I'm in. I remember it dipped to minus 550 there for a second, then jumped back up to minus 600. I was like, maybe I got too greedy. Nope, didn't get too greedy. Got to minus 500, even got into the minus 400s here around town. And offshore, even south of minus 400. Pinnacle, I believe, closed at minus 375 on Floyd Mayweather. And it remains to this day, I said Saturday, being very honest, Saturday was the biggest single betting day of my life this past Saturday. I'm verklempt even talking about it. But as far as one single event, was the most money I've ever bet on one single event, it will always probably remain Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor. And I remember, and it was one of those things where a lot of people in town would go to a bank and withdraw money, and the teller would say to you, you'd be like, yeah, I'll have this money back on Monday. Why are you taking all this money? I'll have it back on Monday. Don't worry. And then when the night of the fight actually got here, and people who were, I was at Teddy Covers' house. Teddy Covers had a viewing party that night. Shout out to Teddy and his son, the great basketball playing Isaiah. But we're at Teddy Covers' house, and when you have that much going on an event, and this speaks for so many of us, then when it starts, you start, you're like, okay, this is boxing. What have I done? What have I gotten myself into? And Conor McGregor, for the first three rounds, kind of wins all three of those rounds. And even though you know Floyd could probably figure this out, there's a little bit of you was like, what's happening here? And then once Floyd once Floyd decided to do his thing, it was over, and in a dominant fashion. But that, I mean, if you talk about Leicester City team of the decade, PASPA that day being the single biggest impactful day, but there'll never be anything like Mayweather McGregor again, because it was this unbelievable MMA money, the MMA people banking on Conor, and all this Irish money in town. It was an amazing weekend. Jeff, you were leaning in. You want to say something?
No, I have nothing to add other than that was that and the Nationals this year probably were the two biggest successes in a way a line came to a position that I liked as well.
Well, the Nationals here on a numbers game, we said it. I said repeatedly, and I've never said this about anything else, it was your obligation to bet the Washington Nationals. If you are doing this correctly, again, there's no guarantees. Could I tell you with 100% certainty that the Nationals are going to win? Of course not. It's a sporting event. But if you're doing this betting thing correctly, it was your obligation to bet the Nationals time and time again for all the moments that we outlined here on the show. I'm just trying to think of other things that we hadn't brought up this decade. Obviously, the Vegas Golden Knights, which is closed locally here, right? We'll get to hockey tomorrow. We'll get to baseball tomorrow. I'm not sure if these will be the teams mentioned. But the Vegas Golden Knights didn't get the prize, so they won't be mentioned tomorrow with Blake. But the Golden Knights were famously 500-1 before their inaugural season to win the Stanley Cup. And, you know, they were really good early, and we were kind of like, wow, this is, you know, what a great way to start. First of all, it started under horrible circumstances. It was post the Las Vegas shootings, and the Knights as an organization couldn't have handled that better with the community of Las Vegas, and they were beloved instantly in this town. They got off to a great start in hockey, and they just kept, and we were sort of like, wow, this is great, but, you know, this can't last. And they just kept winning and winning and winning. They got to the playoffs. They're like, oh, it's not that hard to get to the playoffs in hockey, so, you know, we'll see how far this goes. And they just kept winning and winning, and they got to the Stanley Cup Finals. And I remember saying to people here, I'm like, guys, I've been a lifelong Capitals fan. So they get to the finals against the Caps. I'm sorry, I can't root for you. They get to the finals against the Caps. They win game one against the Caps. 500-1 for people holding tickets, some people. They're three games away from the Stanley Cup, and then the Capitals just destroyed them. I think 20 goals, if I'm not mistaken, in the next four games against Marc-Andre Fleury. Turns out the Caps were the team of destiny who had waited 44 years for their Stanley Cup, but that could have happened in hockey. That was obviously big. We alluded to UMBC beating Virginia 16-1, but that was UMBC. I mean, 16 seeds were 0-135 against number ones before UMBC. The Retrievers, for those scoring at home, knocked off Virginia. But that was, you know, that was like 20-1 before that game. So for one game, that was unbelievable. But we're talking 20-1. Keep in mind, again, Leicester City, 5,000-1. It was 20-1 for one game. Still amazing. And I remember there was somebody who had an $800 money line bet on UMBC for that game at CG, 20-1 odds, paid out $16,800. William Hill took 134 bets on UMBC before that game, according to ESPN, at 25-1, so a little higher than that. Largest six were for $100, though, so $2,600. So for one game, that was huge.
One thing about that tournament, too, remember everyone was talking about that was going to be the year that the 16 beat the 1 because Penn was really good out of the Ivy, right? And Kansas really just methodically handled them through the game.
Yeah.
And the Virginia game was the last game of the first round, basically, on that Friday night. And I was covering Missouri and Florida State and Nashville, and we were watching the game on the television and tied at halftime. All right. Virginia put the clamps on, and then it was pretty obvious in the second half what was going to happen in that UMBC game.
It really was. They never really threatened to come back. It was just, I remember I was about to go out somewhere just watching it in amazement. But that you can't stress enough that UVA story, how they lost the previous year, and then the nature of their victories last year on the way to their title. Texas Tech was 75-1 when I got them. Near miss. Took the final game to overtime last year. Near miss in terms of sports betting teams of the decade. Who was that kid for UMBC that was just awesome? Do you remember his name?
I'm blanking. It was Lyles.
Lyles.
I forget his first name.
A commuter school between D.C. and Baltimore. Actually, closer to Baltimore. University of Maryland, Baltimore County. What else? I guess Tiger winning the Masters has to be mentioned. But it's like his odds sucked the whole time.
If we're going sports moments of the decade,
yeah,
sure.
But not
sports betting, though.
Yeah.
No.
They may remember everybody wanted to talk about this dude who made that $85,000 bet to win $1.19 million. I can't remember which shop that was.
That was Will Hill.
Will Hill, too. But everyone was, like, lauding him. I was like, that's the worst bet ever. Good for him that he won it, but good Lord. But, yeah, not a sports betting moment. What am I forgetting? First day ever at VSiN, Patriots Falcons Super Bowl. Patriots trailed 28-3. At 28-9, I don't know what it was at 28-3, but at 28-9, it was 16-1 on the Patriots. And people were banging it, pounding it at 16-1. Not a good day for the books. Patriots ended up covering the pre-flop line in overtime. Just what a day that was. And then I guess a day that I don't like to talk about. Cavaliers coming back from a 3-1 deficit against the Warriors in 2016. Warriors had two home games, their 73-win season. Cavaliers were plus 1150 to come back from the 3-1 deficit. Plus 1150 went down 3-1. So some other moments that need to be mentioned from the decade.
Individual game that my dad just mentioned to me. Remember last year, first round of the playoffs in the NBA, when Golden State was up by 30 in the first half against the Clippers?
Oh, my God.
And
yes.
That was, I believe it was 1,500 or 150 to 1. I don't remember. I got to double check.
We got to check on that. That was a moment.
But that was
too.
Another one, too. That was a 30-point game with a team that was pre-flop, I think, a 13.5-point dog as it was.
That's unbelievable that happened. It just, and it was a game that ultimately just sort of washes away. But yes, that happened. So we got to check on what the number is. But anyway, tomorrow we'll get Blake back. We'll do his team of the decade in hockey. Maybe it's the ones we mentioned. Well, Golden Knights didn't win it, so it couldn't be the one we mentioned. I think I know what the hockey one is. Baseball, which will be interesting. NFL and NBA. We'll do that tomorrow with Blake as we continue with the sports betting teams of the decade right here exclusively on A Numbers Game at VSiN, the sports betting network. It's Gil Alexander. Jeff Parlay, producer number 5, is here as well. So a lot of audio problems this morning on the show being reported back, and we are aware of those. But what I want to do as a result of those audio problems, and hopefully we can find the audio and put it in podcast form. I can't make any promises, but hopefully we can get that at the Beating the Book podcast for our sports betting teams of the decade. So a lot of people ended up missing what was a lot of work going into the sports and the research for the teams that got to the championship or won the championship, rather, with the longest odds either before the season started or during the season. So for those folks who missed some of those, Jeff, let me just recap what we did today. Yesterday, I think everybody got horses, golf, tennis. Maybe we should talk about some of those. Well, I don't know. We'll try to put those in podcasts. Some of those tennis ones, honestly, I think most people don't even remember. Like the female tennis players, the women's tennis players, who were on that list were probably like not recognizable to some people. Flavia Panetta? No? Anybody? that doesn't ring a bell for anybody. So that was certainly interesting. But as far as what was done today and what actually for folks who missed that, by the way, the tennis players, I just want to get these straight yesterday, because yesterday it was horses, it was golf, it was tennis, it was Premier League, it was college hoops, and it was college football. The women's tennis players that made the list, Marion Bartoli, 100-1 to win the 2013 Wimbledon Slam, third slam of that year, of course. Flavia Panetta, 150-1 to win the 2015 U.S. Open. So those are the most obscure names on in any sport. But as far as today, if you missed it, we started with hockey. The honorable mentions were the 2015-2016 Penguins, who were, I get 18-15-4 at one point during that year. Slow start. That's what they were on New Year's Day. They were plus 650 entering the playoffs. But the preseason, they were 13-1. So they were an honorable mention. We have these on the screen at VSiN.com and the VSiN app. 2011-2012 Kings, who were 16-1 during the preseason, but had the highest pre-playoff odds of any Stanley Cup champ this decade at 22-1. And again, that was a team that was in 10th place in the Western Conference with 1 month remaining in the year. And then finally, Jonathan Quick's goaltending and great defense on that team was complemented by all of a sudden the offensive surge they'd been looking for all year. But the NHL team of the decade, no surprise there, was this past year's St. Louis Blues, closing the preseason at 30-1. Midseason odds as high as 250-1 on January 10th. And of course, we had Scott Barry on the show. We talked about all these guys who had these outrageous Blues tickets from right around the nadir, their low point of that season. So no surprise on the hockey pick. How did you feel about the baseball pick, Jeff? Because the honorable mentions were all three Giants teams, 2010, 2012, 2014. We went through all the reasons for those. The 2015 Royals, this past year's Washington Nationals in 2019, but the baseball sports betting team of the decade, the 2011 St. Louis Cardinals. And we talked about Game 6. By the way, the Cardinals, as we point out here at VSiN.com, the VSiN app, on August 25th, they were 10.5 games behind Atlanta for the wild card. September 1st, they were 200-1 to win the World Series. That's a great call by Blake Mahoney at SportsOddsHistory.com. Great call. You were at that Game 6 parlay?
I was.
Wow. And I contend, and maybe I'm wrong, like of all the great sporting events of this decade, would you agree that that is one of the ones that people seem to never mention?
Well, the 2011 and the 2015 World Series are kind of the two that just get lost in the shuffle. I don't know why that ended up being the case, because 2011 was an unbelievable seven-game series that featured a Pujols three-homer game, that featured that great Game 6. That Game 6, we were talking about it during one of the breaks before, it was so sloppy early in the game.
Yes.
Freeze dropped the pop-up that scored a run for Texas.
That's right,
There were multiple just terrible defensive plays throughout early in that game, and I'll stick with this, and my dad was at the game too, and he and I will always be hand-in-hand in this one. The biggest mistake of that game was made by Ron Washington, and it cost him a championship. Leaving Nelson Cruz in the game in right field instead of putting Andy Chavez in for defense in the ninth inning of Game 6, it cost the Texas Rangers a World Series. Because Andy Chavez makes that play on the freeze triple probably 99 out of 100 times. Cruz was never a good outfielder. He got to the ball, and alligator armed it. And it cost him a World Series in the end. And also that Game 6, the Hamilton hit the homer in the top of the 10th inning, and the Cardinals had to come back and get two in the bottom of the 10th also. Unbelievable game.
The Cardinals, and we went through what happened there in the 9th, 10th, and 11th, but the Cardinals set two records in that Game 6 win. First team to come back twice from deficits in both the 9th and 10th innings, and the first team to score in the 8th, 9th, 10th, and 11th. And that, of course, was the shot over Nelson Cruz. You think Nelson Cruz misplayed that ball in right field?
He got there. He alligator-armed it.
Yeah, alligator-armed it. Amazing. That was the two-out, two-strike, ninth-inning triple from David Freese, who, of course, then ended up winning it two innings later in the 11th. Just an amazing one. Then we talked about the NBA, honorable mentions in the NBA, and I think this was a good list, too. I think he's right about this. Honorable mention in the NBA, the 2014-2015 Golden State Warriors. That was the first of the Warriors championships this decade. Andre Iguodala, your finals MVP. Steph Curry, your MVP for the season. They were 67-15 that year. Had lost the Clippers in round one the previous season. I can't tell you enough, again, how the Bay Area lost their minds when they had traded Monte Ellis before that for Andrew Bogut. Bogut was a part of that championship team. So they were one of the honorable mentions. 28-1 that preseason. I remember Dr. Bob was all over them that year as well at 28-1. Toronto Raptors this past year, plus 1850 in the preseason. And again, that, as much as we remember the win over the Warriors in the finals, the Warriors just a mash unit at that point, it was really that Game 7 win over Philly. And that ball that Kawhi shot that seemed to shift in midair and bounced off the rim four times for the Game 7 win. But the NBA team of the decade, and I think he's right about this, the 2010-2011 Dallas Mavericks. Like, we forget, first of all, we forget that that was even this decade, right? But we forget, as we close it out, we forget that Dallas, 20-1 in the preseason, they were 57-25, and despite that, they were a third seed in the West. They flew under the radar throughout the season, 12-1 to 18-1 most of the season, as Blake points out, but 18-1 entering the playoffs. And that finals against the Miami Heat, it was the first year of LeBron, and there was a lot of LeBron hate back then after the decision and the way that that was handled. But the Mavs, as I mentioned, they were down 14 with 7 minutes plus left in that game. They roared back. That was a team with Dirk, obviously, Jason Kidd, Sean Marion, J.J. Barea. That was just an unbelievable team. You'd agree with that selection, Jeff? I would.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It has to be, because that Mav team, of all the good Mav teams through the first decade of this millennium, that this was the one that won the title was kind of backwards, because, of course, the 67-win team that was probably one of the best regular season teams I've ever seen that got stunned by the We Believe Warriors, that was the one where we all thought, oh, Dallas missed the window. And then they come back. They were three. They were They beat Oklahoma City, I believe, in the Western Conference Finals that year before OKC was really OKC. And you mentioned it before. That was a double-digit game with 6 minutes to go in Game 2 against Miami. With Miami about to go up 2-0, and the series would have been over if they don't blow Game 2 and the comeback. And then I remember about Game 6, it was apparent it was over when Jan Mahimi made three straight shots to begin the fourth quarter. And then as soon as that happens, you're like, well, it's time to pack it up for Miami.
By the way, Heat up 15. I aired. Heat up 15 with 7:14 left in that game and stormed back Game 2. Ended up winning the series in 6 games. They were down 2-1 and then won 3 straight. 2 at Dallas, 1 at Miami by 10 to close it out. Joe, Jason Jett Terry, don't want to forget about him. He was
awesome in that series.
Key cog to that. By the way, for those who are listening on SiriusXM, you're like, didn't you guys talk about this earlier? We are rehashing it because there's a whole network of our audience that didn't hear it, and we wanted to actually clarify some of these because we had to rush through it the first time around. But a lot of our audience didn't get to hear it, and we want to put this in podcast form as well. Finally, the NFL. Let's just talk about that real quick here, Jeff. 2012 Ravens honorable mention. That was the Ravens team that were crushing Colin Kaepernick and the Niners in that Super Bowl, and they were doing so to the tune of 28-6. And then that delay came. Right, conspiracy theorists love that game. Where it's like, everybody turn off the lights. We don't like the betting outcome. It's conspiracy theorists talking. I had Baltimore that day. Loved Colin Kaepernick's team in the NFC playoffs, but loved Baltimore that day. They got it done. That's an honorable mention team. Ray Lewis, by the way, at that point, remember in 2012, he was an original Raven, and he had played on the first Ravens Super Bowl team. And he was retiring at the end of that game, and that's how he went out. Great for him. The other honorable mention, the 2017 Eagles, which are very recent in our minds. They were 40-1 at their height in the preseason, obviously beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl behind Nick Foles. Remember, Carson Wentz tore his ACL in Week 14 against the Rams, had a 13-3 record. They had the number one seed, but they were 15-1 to win it all entering the playoffs. 15-1, the Eagles got it done. But the NFL team of the decade, the 2011 New York Giants. So not the team that beat the Patriots team that was trying to be undefeated. That was way back in 2007. 2007, the Patriots were 18-0 when the Giants beat them. But in 2011, the Giants were 22-1 in the preseason, got as high as 66-1 when they were 6-5 midseason. 66-1. They dropped to 50-1 when they were 6-6 and heading into Week 13. I know that's counterintuitive, but it was 66-1 at their peak. Then after they lost, they were actually 50-1. They beat the Cowboys Week 17 to win the NFC East. Entered the playoffs at 22-1 as a 4 seed, beat the Packers. That wasn't the Tom Coughlin red face game. That was back in 2007, I believe, too. But they beat the Packers at Lambeau, division round by 17 as 8-point dogs. Then they beat the Niners in San Francisco as 2-point dogs. And then, again, they were down 17-15 with less than 4 minutes left. They're pinned back. That pass from Eli Manning to Mario Manningham, you should go back and look at it. It was everything. On a 1st-and-10, but it just lodged in between the corner and the safety. An amazing pass, and that's what led the final game-winning drive. 21-17, Giants win it. That, by betting numbers, the NFL sports betting team of the decade. You like that choice, Jeff?
Absolutely.
Yep.
The only bad team to win a championship this decade was the 2011 New York Giants.
Yeah.
That was the only bad team to win. Like the 2006 Cardinals, which might be the worst team in the history of professional sports.
It's funny you bring that up.
To win a championship.
I always call them that. The 2006 Cardinals, to me, what are they, like 80?
Won 83 games.
Yeah, 83.
They were horrible.
79.
And, of course,
it happens in baseball.
Yeah, it can happen in baseball because you get hot at the right time. And it's hard to do it in football because just usually the gap between the elite teams and the not-so-good teams in the postseason is just so big. But, look, the Giants had Green Bay's number, those two postseason runs. That was the 15-1 Green Bay team they beat in 2011, too. And that game was not close. That was a destruction that the Giants put on Green Bay at Lambeau that day. And they're the only team to really have Belichick and Brady's number through this whole run, which is amazing that it was Tom Coughlin, who was a really good football coach, and Eli Manning, who might be the biggest lightning rod of a Hall of Fame discussion there is at this point.
It's the NFC East, right? Philadelphia did as well. But Leicester City, the global sports team of the decade, 5001, the 2015-2016 Leicester City team that just really flirted with relegation the previous year and caught fire. 5001 causing William Hill UK to never to say, we'll never put up anything above 1001 or longer odds than 1001 after that experience. Cash out options all available. They won the Premier League with 81 points that year. Leicester City, the sports betting global team of the decade. We'll come back. We'll wrap it up. We don't offer repeat segments here, but for the audience that didn't get to hear that one, we wanted to wrap it up. We'll put it in podcast form for anybody who did.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.